This is Using the Whole Whale, a podcast that brings you stories of data and technology in the nonprofit world. My name's George Weiner, your host and the chief whaler of WholeWhale.com. Thanks for joining us. Welcome to this week's podcast where we're talking about items about things with stuff in them. Very clearly, sometimes we need help with our storytelling. That's actually exactly what we're talking about this week with the Rockefeller Foundation. Jeremy Bivens there, who's led a project as their digital media manager, creating Hatch for Good, really putting some science and teeth behind storytelling trainings. And they worked with a great firm called Hadaway, and we'll be talking with RJB, the SVP, I know, a lot of letters, and his work putting together Hatch for Good. Welcome to episode 28. Here we go. And I'm here with Jeremy Bivens from the Rockefeller Foundation and RJ from Hadaway. Guys, thank you for joining us today. I'm super excited. But just to start, Jeremy, can you introduce yourself and then tell us what's going on here.
Sure. So I'm Jeremy Bivens. I'm the digital media manager at the Rockefeller Foundation. And we're here to talk a little bit about Hatch for Good, our new digital storytelling platform.
Great. And RJ, you're also with us. What was your role in all of this?
Yeah, thanks for having us. I'm RJB. I'm a senior vice president at Hadaway Communications, and we were the lead grantee on the research that went into creating Hatch for Good and then actually the implementation and development of it.
What exactly is Hatch for Good? How do you describe it?
So Hatch for Good is a digital suite of tools and resources for storytellers at for-purpose organizations. So do-gooders at nonprofits, social enterprises, and other organizations that benefit the poor or vulnerable. We started the program here at Rockefeller a little over a year ago. We had a small team tasked with elevating the practice of storytelling to drive social impact in our organization as well as in organizations around the sector. And that was, it's a huge order, right? Because storytelling has to be truly embedded within an organization for it to work. So when we jumped in, and Hadaway was really instrumental in doing this with us, the first thing that we did was start talking to tons of different people, program officers and grantees within our own organization, technologists, journalists, people in agencies and at big tech companies, everyday practitioners, you name it. We were slinging tons of questions at tons of different people about how they identify stories, how they capture them, and also how they share them.
Great. And so as you started down this road, RJ, I guess this is a bit for you, you know, how do you even start with requirements gathering? What is your process as you are looking at the landscape and where this project might fit?
Yeah, that's exactly where we started, was sort of evaluating the landscape. We did a storytelling landscape, so looked at different narrative models and the way that people are using different kinds of models to create stories. And then we also looked at the technological landscape and tried to identify, you know, which platforms are being used for different kinds of storytelling tactics and activities, and kind of went from there. And Jeremy mentioned the research we did. Out of that, we sort of identified five key need areas that the people we talked to had identified. And so we had sort of a little bit of a roadmap, and that was first, organizations needed help with storytelling strategy. That was probably the biggest outcome of the research, is that a lot of organizations just don't think about goals, audiences, objectives, things like that before they dive in. So that was super important. And the rest were capacity. How do you know if you have enough capacity for storytelling? The third piece was content. So how do you actually create content that's compelling and consistent and motivating? Then the fourth piece was actually the platforms. And then the last was, of course, evaluation. So how do you evaluate your efforts? So that gave us a good kind of roadmap for where we needed to go based on those needs of the interviewees.
Great. And you kind of answered my next question in my mind, was like, what is the need and problem this is solving? And it seemed like there was a genuine need out there for, you know, the social good and nonprofits out there to tell their story, but in a logical framework that would make sense. But I'm wondering, you know, what drove Rockefeller, traditionally, obviously, a grant-making organization, into this sort of like, we have to take this on and tackle a pretty daunting web app here.
Yeah, absolutely. From our side, we do quite a bit of funding with quite a few nonprofits and working in systemic change. And so we also generate a lot of reports and things of that nature from those grantees, which are wonderful, but turning those reports into content that can get into the right audience at the right time, the right medium now is very difficult, right? So really we're generating all of these great stories, all this rich content, but they're buried. They're buried in our reports. They're buried in our notes. They're buried all over the place. So for us, the incentive was how do we surface these stories? That way we can tell the story essentially of what our grantees are doing on the ground, the work that really does make a difference to the beneficiaries and to the communities and to the people that they're working with. And that helps elevate our grantees so they can get more support, more funding, more of that kind of thing around the world to help more people.
Great. That makes sense. You're sitting on a mountain of amazing stories. You're like, it's just unfair. This is in our backyard. They should be shared. They should be helping the organizations. That's really great. So are you incorporating this into your reporting for your grantees, and how is that looking?
Yeah, absolutely. So we assumed that because we were having this issue, and nonprofits are really the fantastic resource for stories that just undertapped, that other grant makers were having the same issue. So having a resource like the digital tool would allow them to also tap into this with their grantees. So we're working with our grantees and our program staff now on a better framework for how they can identify these things and kind of get them up the chain, especially to the communications team, so we can help help build the influence around these. And so part of that is kind of building the internal capacity for working with our grantees to say, you know, we need more than just the data that you're collecting on the ground. When you go into a village and you're talking about the work that you're doing there, get one quote from somebody that you're helping and that you've changed day-to-day life for them. Get me one photo of one of the places that you're visiting, that kind of stuff. And then once they bring that back, then we can start weaving the larger narrative about why this work is important, what the impact has been, both with data and with story.
Mentioned this narrative framework. How did you come up with it, and can you just give us the outline of what the narrative framework is?
Sure, this is RJ. I can hop in on that. Actually, one of the core tools we use in our work at Hadaway is this narrative structure, narrative framework. We use it in almost all of our projects, and we most often use it to help develop messages for organizations or messages about issues. We use it because it's simple, but it's really powerful for organizing ideas that you communicate. A lot of research, you hear so much in the business press and in philanthropic press and basically everywhere about the power of storytelling and the power of narrative, and all of that's, you know, so popular because as humans we're all hardwired to understand the world in terms of narratives, in terms of stories. And so when we can help nonprofits and foundations tell their own narratives in a way that connects the people you're working to help, the goals they seek to achieve, the problems they're trying to overcome, and the solutions that we provide, that can really help orient people to the way that we're already thinking. And if we can tap into sort of existing narratives, that'll make the storytelling much, much easier, much more motivating, and much more consistent.
Great. So you built into the actual, you know, application and login process these, you know, very specific elements. You're touching on them, like we need data, we need the story narrative, we need the individual that is being helped, we need the photo, you know, that, you know, that you can sometimes often miss. Are there other key elements in the soup of the narrative that are things that were like unique that you brought to this?
That's a good question. I mean, I think the only thing that I can come up with, and Jeremy, you should chime in if so, is really connecting this idea of narrative, so an overarching narrative about an organization, with the individual stories they're telling. And it kind of gets back to the original point I made about organizations often diving into storytelling without thinking about goals, audiences, and sort of that strategic framework, and or organizations using a social media tool as its own initiative. Like they're using they have a Facebook initiative, and that's, you know, the tools should be guided by the strategy, not vice versa. So I think connecting that meta narrative to the individual stories and then letting the kind of tools and platforms fall from there is an important kind of connection to make across these tools.
Great. So we've got sort of two levels of metrics that I'm now interested in. One, let's start at the very root level, at the nonprofit level and the organizations using Hatch for Good. How are you providing metrics and feedback and in terms of how well they told their story and what does that look like?
George, we've been thinking about this both in terms of supply and demand. So the supply side are things like, you know, through the site, how many grantees are being reached, how many stories are being generated, the number of people and thought leaders we're engaging to produce content, things like that. And we're just starting the sort of story collection process, and I think that will be actually an interesting experiment in how we help organizations evaluate their own stories. And we have that story map in the content toolkit, which helps provide that framework, but we expect to have a lot of sort of ongoing learning with organizations. The demand side is really about trying to think about incentives, partnerships, other things that we can do to help make sure that we're creating long-term demand for Hatch and for, you know, storytelling tools like Hatch.
And as RJ was just saying, I think as we start to get more feedback back, and this year especially, we've been doing a little bit more in the field, doing presentations, working more one-on-one with grantees, that kind of thing, we'll be able to get those stories in and provide feedback in real time to them within these sessions and within these meetings, and that will help guide our next phase for Hatch, what that's going to look like in terms of evaluation and content and that kind of stuff.
Great. So that's the top level, what you're looking at, platform level, like how many stories are being told, obviously engagement metrics for the overall ecosystem. Let's say, you know, Whole Whale jumps on there and I want to tell my story, and I will. I'll be jumping on there to tell my story. What are the sort of metrics that on the like micro user level that I'm being exposed to? Or is that in the pipeline? How are you looking and thinking about that?
So right now what we're doing is we're constantly looking at, on our end, what the new versus returning user rates are, because we want the site itself to be a resource that people can keep coming back to and contributing to. So we're looking at the user path across the site, how many pages they're visiting, where they're going, where they are and where they're leaving from, and we use the information from a content strategy perspective, which sections need more of a specific type of content, which pieces should be considered for a newsletter or for social media promotion, which thought leaders, maybe you, for instance, George, we really should be highlighting and shining a spotlight on and saying we need more content for data and analytics, so we need George to maybe contribute a new piece, that kind of thing. So that really keeps the design and the user experience top of mind. And there's also a great feedback push from the consumer, the site consumer perspective. So me as somebody who's just on the site is going through, I can, you know, make comments and share things from Hatch in the Explore section. I can also submit feedback in and say, I really love this article that George wrote. How can I get more resources like this? And we'll be able to provide that sort of structure on the site itself. And then the final piece of data that we're really looking at are on the story toolkits themselves, the storytelling toolkits. We really want to see the completion rates go through, right? There are 5 toolkits. We want to see where people are starting, where they're dropping off, where they're completing and having a lot of success or trouble, so that we can start streamlining that process, making it more intuitive, adding better features to it, and also having more relevant content that can help guide that pathway.
Great. So it really seems like you're focused on the macro level for now and building up what I honestly is very impressive, the list you have there. And of course, I'll be writing something there. You flatter me. I mean, that's the number one way to get me to do anything. Brilliant. But you've got these 5 areas. You talked about strategy, content, evaluation, capacity, platform. And inside of that, you've got like a wealth of all of this information. So far, having, you know, hatched already, what are some of the surprising things you've seen in your data that maybe, you know, you didn't expect?
You know, looking through analytics, I was trying to pull the top pieces of content just the other day, actually, and I expected to see more of a balance between the 5 toolkits. And we've obviously heard a lot of pain points around the same types of things, which is why the toolkits are named what they are. But strategy is still strategy and capacity are really, really top performers for us in terms of nonprofits and social impact organizations coming through and saying, this is where we really need the most help. And talking to a lot of people as well in the field, we'll hear people say, you know, I really want to do better with stories, or my department's really honed in on this. How do we work with other departments in highlighting these things, building these great stories, sharing them, and then how do they work on different platforms, that kind of stuff. So really we're looking at strategy and capacity right now, have become are really the number one pain points on the site for people.
Those two sort of ecosystems, hopefully I have this right in my mind, you have this massive education and growing massive education area, and then the literal, we're going to walk you through step by step to help your organization tell its story. Where do you see the platform going with regard to, you know, the next year of growth? Where are you investing, which side, and how are you thinking about that?
You know, Hadaway is actually going to be in a very good position to talk about this. We've been talking about a lot of options with them for what 2015 looks like, so I'm going to defer to RJ on this one.
Thanks. Yeah, I mean, it's really exciting that we're going to continue to sort of improve and tweak and add, and Jeremy sort of referenced some of the big pieces of feedback we've gotten, and George, you mentioned the sort of wealth of stuff that's in there, and we appreciate that compliment. I think there's so much there that we're actually, you know, thinking about how we can make those somewhat potentially overwhelming toolkits be more bite-sized and easier for people to kind of complete with the time they have. And we're also, you know, all the things we've talked about so far in terms of getting more contributed content, more case studies, more stories from people, we'll all continue over the next, you know, the next year or so. And I think the so there's sort of the development side, making tweaks and improving the user experience, but then also trying to expand this digital storytelling community. So bringing more people in to use the toolkits, getting their experiences and feedback, case studies, you know, and hopefully eventually creating this sort of goldmine of stories for others to learn from and think about.
So we are going to jump in the time machine now, and we're going to go back prior to project starting, just as it's starting, and I'm going to throw you both in the time machine, and you're going to go back, and you're going to have a short amount of time to just tell past Jeremy and past RJ what they should know going into this project.
That's a fun exercise. I mean, I can start, Jeremy, if you want to jump in. I think, I mean, one of the biggest lessons that we learned is that there's so many potential directions to go with this, that I think it was nice to keep us all organized around a framework like fairly early on after doing the research. So I think I would tell myself, look for patterns, look for commonalities, look for points of agreement early on, because with hundreds of people's input, it can be hard to kind of sift through all of that. So that's something I think we did pretty well, but I think we could have recognized it even earlier and maybe even designed things a little more intuitively around those patterns we were seeing, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's absolutely right. I look at a lot of the feedback that we have from the site, from the toolkits, from the content, and we've been getting a ton of fantastic comments and things back from people about what we can do to improve, from small things to really big things. And a lot of the small things you go through and you think, oh, why didn't we think of this? Why isn't this something that we included in the first round? So stuff like that. But the reception around it so far has been great, and we're really heartened to see so many people clicking the feedback button and emailing us directly and saying, we'd really love to see these features. This is great. How can we do this better? Stuff like that.
The time machine can be a fun toy. Fortunately, you don't actually have to have that conversation, but imagine where you are a year from now, going back in the time machine again. You know, it's fun. I like the way Rockefeller has chosen to sort of take this type of project on themselves because they saw a market opportunity. Jeremy, maybe you can talk a bit about how early on you sort of made the case internally, or how it came up, and then you chose, you know, not to internally develop a team that could develop this, but instead look for outside resources. Can you walk us through a bit of that decision making? Because I think, you know, as the foundations that may be listening and playing with these types of ideas themselves, what factored into your decision making to bring on obviously the like experts from Hadaway to help you?
Sure. I mean, there was a clear need internally when we talk about stories, because again, we're sitting on kind of the mountain of buried stories, just like most nonprofits and foundations are. So the sell internally, you know, it wasn't an uphill slog, right? It's what do we do to get there? And we're a grant maker, and we're big into partnerships. So it wasn't too tough to also say, you know, how do we approach this? And it was obvious to us we're going to need partners and grantees to leverage this. And so when Hadaway had responded to the RFP process, you know, it was a clear partner in Hadaway. And I think when you look at the outputs and the reports and all the fun things we've been able to do together, you know, it's been an uphill climb in getting this off the ground in a good way, right? It's a lot of work to get something built and off the table and get people to use it. But finding the partner in Hadaway was really critical. And then being able to bring people from all over the sector and in the for-profit space together to talk about what is it that we need to do was just a fantastic experience. So for other funders, you know, it's really about convening the right partners to know what you want to do and to hear all those kind of outside opinions. And like RJ was saying before, identifying the trends and the pain points that we really should be focusing in on.
Yeah, I could say maybe a bit more specifically to how can nonprofits really leverage Hatch for Good? And what is the ideal use case in your mind? Can you walk us through like a dream user scenario?
Yeah, I mean, I think the ideal scenario, and again, this is like getting back to the point we made earlier about there being so much information there that we probably need to temper our own expectations. But ideally, an organization would come to us with, you know, a defined sort of idea of how they can improve as a storytelling organization, as we say, whether it's the collection or, you know, creation or sharing of stories, and use, you know, some of these toolkits to really help clarify their needs and help give them solid direction and have them walk away from that, you know, hour or so spent on the site with some concrete sort of direction and guidance, informed not only by the sort of questions and answers and resources within those toolkits, but also through the contributed content, the tips, the case studies. Those are really designed to help organizations when they get stuck on something, or to provide more more, you know, food for thought when they're thinking about a specific aspect of their storytelling. So in my ideal world, someone comes there, they get a lot of value out of the toolkit, but they also maybe read another nonprofit's experience and how they used Vine to help connect with donors, for instance, and walk away with a really good plan, but also some food for thought creatively.
And I think also from our perspective, especially in the short term, it's hearing from grantees, which we've heard from, I think, two already, which is pretty fantastic. You know, they discovered Hatch and they used it to produce this really fantastic video that they've now submitted to us as part of their report back. Or they're working with a program officer on collecting better stories from the field when before they're really just looking at data. So it's in the short term, it's hearing those anecdotes from our own grantees and how they're kind of changing their approach to work in the field.
Is there a sort of favorite story that you have on the platform so far? I know every story should be your favorite, but we love all of our children equally.
Right, right. And we do. I think one of the more exciting pieces of content, probably because I'm a marketer at heart, is Garth's 40-60 rule piece of content, talking about how organizations should spend only 40% of their time really preparing content and writing it, and 60% of their time thinking about how they should be sharing it. So identifying the right people they should be talking to, identifying the right platforms that should be going out on, that kind of stuff.
Great. And RJ, I don't know if you've fallen in love with any of the items floating around the site. You're welcome to share.
Yeah. And the one that Jeremy pointed out is great. One of the ones I think we keep going back to is actually something that was contributed by Jay Janeski, the digital director at Rockefeller, about the science of storytelling. And a lot of the work that we do is informed by social sciences, linguistics, social psychology, things like that. But this article kind of summarizes a few of the big theories for how science, how our brain works, how brains process information and stories, and how that can really create more effective, more powerful stories. So I think that's really worth checking out and thinking about.
Great. So as we wrap up here, can you give me a quick summary of how a not-for-profit or foundation might find you and how they get in touch?
Okay, yeah, sure. So the best way to find us is to go to hatchforgood.org. And there are easy ways around the site to, shoot us a note through the feedback bar, contact us. And again, we're soliciting feedback. We're still in beta, so we welcome everybody to get in touch that way.
Great. And RJ, how might people get in touch with Hadaway?
Yeah, thanks for asking. We're at hadaway.com, and you can see a lot of our some of our other work and clients and team and stuff like that there.
Awesome. Well, thanks to both of you for jumping on, and this has been very informative. I encourage everyone to go chase down Hatch for Good. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks, George.
You have your homework. Go to hatchforgood.org. They have tons of fantastically curated content. I'm proud to say that we have our first article up on Hatch for Good, and we are actually talking about how to turn data into action. We have some fun with that one. Check out their platform. I think there's a lot you can learn about your own storytelling. I really admire what the Rockefeller Foundation has done here. They identified a need in the community and really sought to create a fantastic tool, leverage their expertise in the field to create a great product. Hope you got something out of it this week. As always, you will find resources. Guess where? wholewhale.com/podcast. All the links are there. You can have all of the links you want there. Thanks, as always, for joining us. Take care. This has been Using the Whole Whale. For more resources on today's show, please visit wholewhale.com/podcast and consider following us on Twitter @wholewhale. And thanks for joining us.